We have a simple agenda today. However, we've got some logistical issues. I understand we do have our commissioner here, but I understand that Commissioner Segrin can only stay for about 15 minutes. Is that about 20? Okay. So what I want to do is try to jump very quickly into our discussion with the department. She does have her staff here, so we'll continue throughout the rest of the hearing with interacting with the staff, but I do want to have an opportunity to hear from the commissioner this morning. So I'm going to skip our, you know, we do still have a few members left to share information. So I'm going to skip that for today just so that we can properly get into this. Representative Gutwald, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, if you're okay with it, I would move approval of the minutes.
Wonderful. Representative Gottwald moves approval of our minutes from the last meeting. You've all taken careful look at it. And any debate or any issues? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is approved, and the minutes are approved. Members, we had originally set up this session to talk about begin our discussion on standards and ultimately to look at also a broad discussion on tests and assessments. We did have a little bit of difficulty lining up the folks that we wanted to line up for this morning, but as it turned out, that was pretty fortuitous because of course the governor earlier this week released his budget proposal. And of course, a good piece of that involves education policy and funding. Some of you who serve on many Representative Greiling's committee know that we've begun the process of going through those set of proposals, obviously with a sharp interest in the finance side of that. I thought, because so many of us here in this committee do not serve on Representative Greiling's committee, that it would be a good idea to have the department walk through the proposal with us here in this committee, and with a particular focus on policy issues. Of course, I'm not going to stop members from asking budget issues, but think about our role as a policy committee and our opportunity and our responsibility to really dive deeper into policy questions. So some of the questions I think that would help us for today's discussion would be to have an understanding of what policy focuses are in the governor's proposal, what if any of those are new policies, how do any of these proposals differ from anything that's currently in place, in present policy, how do any of these build on present policy? And then also to think about the purpose behind them. We spent a good deal of time early talking about the quote-unquote achievement gap issue, and I think it would be appropriate for us to interact with the commissioner and her staff in regards to how these policy proposals help address that particular issue. We've also spent time talking about new high-quality, world-class standards. We heard from SciMath, for instance, a week ago in this regard, and I think it'd be helpful for us to be inquiring as to how these policies further that set of goals, and then also to think about how these policies connect and reinforce the entire pathway up and down the E12 and actually E16 educational pathway. Are any of these policies isolated policies, or are they meant to reinforce our entire educational process for our students in Minnesota? Obviously, a number of you are currently in classrooms, not right now, but are still practicing classroom instructors. Some of you are retired from that. But I think what that does for our committee is it gives a really good perspective in terms of things that, you know, just from your own experience, you have an idea of things that could work or might not work. And so I think, you know, feel free to think about, as you interact with the commissioner and her staff on these policy issues, about the practical element of their proposals from your own experience in the classrooms. And then obviously, as policymakers, for those of experienced policymakers, to do the same. So with that, I will do some announcements a little bit later, but I do want to try to get Commissioner Segrin up here so we can honor her time. And so I'm going to ask her and her staff to come forward. And while she does that, let me just say that I've had the privilege, members, to serve with Commissioner Segrin on this committee and other committees and when she was here in the Minnesota House. And I have found that to have been a very productive and fruitful and very good relationship that I've had with the commissioner. I've also had a great opportunity to work with you, commissioner, and your staff since you became commissioner, mostly through my work in Minnesota Minority Education Partnership, my involvement in the P16 Council. And that's been very productive, very professional relationship that I've enjoyed with you. So I look forward to your presentation, and I welcome you to our committee this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for having us today. And Representative Mariani wanted to kind of just lay on the table for all of you the policy issues behind some of the governor's recommendations today for your consideration. Because just as important as the financial part of what we do, the policy, I think, really undergirds everything. And so your committee really is very key as we go forward and discuss, you know, how we want to do things in the future and how we want to create an infrastructure for our students that will be sustained and will be systemic and build capacity within all of our school districts. And, of course, you all represent varying kinds of and sizes of school districts with many different challenges. So you all come from that perspective. And that's what's really neat about being on a committee like this. It's kind of bringing all of you together and trying to work out and hammer out the good policies that will affect all of the kids. I want to just start with the 3R high schools. The governor named that based on rigor, results, and relevance, early in the morning. And, of course, relationships, too. I'll throw that in. It's very important also for any high school. The policy considerations that you will need to look at will be around the six concepts or principles that frame the 3Rs. And those concepts are in your packet. Thank you. And I also want to introduce my sidekick here is Deputy Commissioner Taz Anderson. She's going to take over when I leave this morning. And Deputy Anderson is extraordinarily gifted and very lucky to have her. The components, the first one, which is would apply to all high schools, regardless of whether they received a grant, would be the idea that all students would be guaranteed at least 1 year of dual high school college credit. And now when we say college, we should really say post-secondary, because what we are intending to do is to allow students, if they are pursuing a trade, if they want to go to a technical school to get an AA or an industry certification, we want to help students understand the relevance of going on beyond high school for at least 2 years and give them the incentive and the excitement about thinking about what they could be doing for their future. And so that would be the first thing, regardless of whether the governor would be proposing that would be a given for all kids and that high schools would guarantee that that would happen. Now, this requirement would not take effect until it would be for this year's fourth graders, so there would be time for districts to gear up. And as you go through the governor's budget, there are many things that he puts in place to help build that capacity for the future. The second component would be college access programs. Now, this is where Representative Mariani and I have worked very closely together. College access programs are tutoring, helping students learn how to take the ACT, SAT. There would be examples of helping parents and students learn how to fill out the FAFSA forms for the grants and aid. So many families and children don't think that they can afford college. Sometimes they're first generation. They've never had a student in college. So these college access programs come alongside the counseling system, sort of adjuncts to the counseling system, to really help identify those students and families that need the support. So that's the second component. The third component is a personal graduation plan for every child. Really sitting down and helping a child map out, in conjunction with their desires and goals and career interests, their high school educational plan. Parents that sign off on that, or the guardian of that child would sign off on that plan each year. It would be reviewed to see if the child is on target, if they need some remediation, maybe they're ahead and they can accelerate. But it's a way of really, again, engaging students, every student in a high school program. Component four, we want to make sure that there are highly qualified teachers and principal leadership in the building. We know that a principal is key to change and leadership, and working together with high-quality teachers is very key. We also want to make sure that there are rigorous and relevant courses for all students. And so looking at your whole curriculum and making sure that there are opportunities for all kids and raising expectations is very, very important. We also want to make sure that the curriculum is connected to real-world context. We want to try to encourage connections with businesses, bring businesses in to talk to students about the application of what they're learning, or actually have demonstration and some opportunities for mentorships, internships, those kinds of things. And then finally, component six is using data. Using it effectively to diagnose where students are and to look at instruction practices and strategically help students be more effective learners. So those are the kinds of policy questions. Are there other components that we have missed? Are there other things that you think are important that a high school should have for the 21st century? What are the things that are missing? These are the things that we identified that should be key components for a 21st century high school. But you may have some additional ideas of things or ways that we can help students have a better high school experience. And I want to say publicly, too, that we have many, many high schools engaged in this work already. They're doing extraordinary, exciting things, and the teachers are doing exciting things. And we want to carry that on and build on those opportunities that have already been created in our schools. Now, the second one, probably the next biggest area the governor is proposing, is our successful schools program. And that is a one-time award for school sites who receive a three-star or better in regard to No Child Left Behind. The concept is simple in that we already have a process in place for recognizing school sites that are meeting basic proficiency for their students, and then rewarding them. And I can remember when No Child Left Behind first was passed at the federal level, and we were all very frustrated with the fact that there were all these sanctions, but there was no recognition of reward, of doing a good job. Once you have met that AYP standard, there was nothing to recognize that. So this was the governor's idea to really recognize. And as you get further and further in your goals, as you know, the percentage is increased every year in AYP. So many districts that probably are at the top already, let's say 85 or 90% of their students in some categories are already meeting AYP, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to go from that 90 to that 95 to that whatever. And I've heard people say, well, if you're already at the top, you're going to get a reward, but even those districts are going to have a hard time getting up to that next bump. Sometimes it's almost easier for somebody that is lower to make larger gains than those that are at the top. So that's the concept there. So that would be another policy issue that you would want to discuss. If you want to reward good work, and we've had this discussion in the past in the policy committee. Paul Marquardt, Representative Marquardt, had a concept 2 or 3 years ago that he was developing, felt the same way. So this has been a discussion we've had in the past. How do we do it? How do we really reward and recognize the good things that are going on? Math and Science Academies is another concept that the governor is promoting. Again, if we are going to be looking at the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math, we know that we also need to help our experienced teachers and come alongside them to expose them to the latest best practices in math and science. We also know that many of our elementary teachers gravitate towards the social sciences instead of the hard sciences. And they also, if we're going to expect the higher levels in high school in math and science, we also need to come alongside of them and help give them some additional professional development in the math and science areas. So we're proposing these regional math and science academies to actually provide some additional training and professional development, and those would be located in region. So there, again, is a way that we're looking at to build capacity and support for teachers. In addition to that, we're looking at alternative school calendars. There's been a lot of discussion last year. The superintendent said we need to add 25 days to our calendar. We need more time on tasks. Can we explore ways to use alternative school calendars, such as a 45-15 type of model or others, that would actually help students learn more effectively? It may not be that we add days or hours to the day, but we maybe restructure our calendar in other effective ways. Another policy decision for you all to be discussing. We are also proposing to grow our Mandarin Chinese program. We've had three task forces that have developed, and we are proposing that as an additional foreign language and to grow that program. The governor also is looking at requiring 4 years of foreign language. Another policy decision for you to make a decision on. Also, we have had great results from a federal program on the mentoring. And it was so successful, it was a mentoring program for new teachers, that we have decided to use the same model that was developed and actually create a state program to mentor new teachers and really take that statewide so that all new teachers will have an opportunity to be supported in the classroom. Again, you know, is mentoring important? Do you believe in it? Should we be doing it and supporting all of our schools and giving all of our schools equal access to that opportunity? We also are requesting some assessment funding. Many of you have come to us and have said that it's very important and you have really felt strongly about a diagnostic or what we call a formative test, that this is giving you more valid information and feedback during the school year than the No Child Left Behind summative test that is required by law. And so what we are proposing is to have an RFP for a formative test that would be aligned to our standards, our state standards, so that you could have, every school district could then have, and this would be voluntary, have an opportunity to use a formative or diagnostic test. Many of you use the NWEA, and the only caveat that we have about the NWEA is that it is not aligned to our state standards. So even though it's a diagnostic test, it may not be giving completely accurate information because it isn't aligned to standards. It could end up being that kind of a test, or, you know, if we have an RFP. But we want to make sure that what this information that you're getting is actually valid and totally reliable for you. But another policy question for you to be thinking about. We know that at this point in time, we have pushed and asked to have a different kind of a system, and the federal government has insisted that we still have a summative assessment. But we can add to that. We can build, and we can have some other positive things to do in our assessment system that will be helpful. So those are kind of the highlights. I may have forgotten some things, and Deputy Commissioner Anderson can certainly jump in. Another issue that I will mention, in fact, Representative Mariani and I were talking about this in the Finance Committee the other day. He brought up the governor is proposing to increase the ELL, English Language Learner, funding by 2% a year. It is a per pupil amount that has been frozen, if you will, and hasn't increased. And we're proposing that that be increased to address the body power, if you will, that you for educating English language learners. But the other policy issue that Representative Mariani brought up is right now it's only funded for 5 years of a student's educational time. And should it be seven? What are the policy implications and what is the research behind that? So that would be something that you would want to discuss here in your committee. And Deputy Commissioner, I may have missed some, so jump in if I have.
Mr. Chair.
Deputy Commissioner, please identify yourself.
Members of the committee, my name is Chaz Anderson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. And I think that you have budget narratives that the committee has given you. This is coming from what's known as Article 2, which is our Education Excellence article of our budget bill, which contains pretty much the policy, a lot of the policy that we're proposing along with the funding. And I think the commissioner really summed up a lot of the initiatives well. I want to start with page 67, which is immediately after the high school proposals.
Commissioner, I'm just going to interrupt for a second. I apologize. I do have a couple of members have some questions, and I would like some good interactive, particularly because I know Commissioner Segrin will be leaving sometime soon. Representative Tilbury and Representative Hosh have some questions.
Thank you, Chair. This question would be for Commissioner Segrin. I guess I would need a little bit more clarification on component two. As you know, we ranked probably 50th in the nation as far as counseling goes, as the counseling ratios and so on. I guess what I'm wondering is, you know that the Minnesota School Counselors Association probably would have ways to have programming that would fulfill component number two, but I'm not finding anything within that list that might indicate that. Or is that considered under the et cetera? Or has it not been talked about?
Mr. Segrin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tilbury, thank you. I'm getting to know all of your names, and if I mispronounce or if I forget your name, please, you know, remind me of it. The idea would be for the college access programs to be adjunct to the counseling system. And, of course, that is another policy issue that you need to be discussing about, you know, whether you can also use some of this money to actually buy some more counselors if you want to. But the counseling system really is not able to do all of the kinds of things. Tutoring. Counselors don't do tutoring. So you have college access programs that can bring in cadres of trained people around certain students that are identified by the counselor to help them become successful. So if we want more students, for example, taking more rigorous math courses, and we know you have a group of students that have the ability but are struggling, you could have a college access program. There's a wonderful program called Avid that provides very wonderful tutoring for students. That's just an example. Counselors also, there's another program called Admission Possible that actually comes in and organizes groups of students to practice the ACT or the SAT. A lot of kids and families, you know, most of us who know the system know that, you know, it's important to practice for that ACT or SAT, that admissions. These kinds of college access programs would actually come in as adjunct to the counselors and organize and help these students practice the ACT, or bring in groups of parents and students to help go over the financial forms. Now, sometimes counselors will do that in a high school. They'll bring parents into a large auditorium and go through the financial forms. But sometimes just going through that is not enough, because if you're a first generation or if you don't speak English, and you don't have an interpreter that night, you're missing a whole lot of families. So many of these college access programs actually have bilingual people that will, let's say, organize and come in after the counselor has identified maybe groups of Hispanic children and their families, and have a night where they would come in and help and really sit down and literally help them fill out those forms. We don't have enough counselors to do that kind of work, but you have these adjunct organizations that can come in and supplement what the counselor system does and really fill in and organize. And the counselor, I look at the counselor as a physician, and he is helping to identify, diagnose, organize the kind of support, help, treatment, whatever you want to call it. The same thing would be the counselor is the big picture, looking at the students, identifying those students with the ability, helping organize the kinds of tutoring, or identifying if you've got gifted students, organizing them to, or any student that would want to do a neat after school, you know, program. College Access is also about camps and after school programs and things that you can really get kids engaged with. So that's where that component comes in. And perhaps, you know, Representative Mariani can talk a little bit about the work that the Minnesota Minority Education Partnership is doing. They're trying to organize. They surveyed all of these programs and organizing and identifying criteria for the best ones to come alongside. But the counselor physically can't do all of that kind of work. So it's those kinds of things that come in alongside to really make a holistic support system for students.
Well, Commissioner, perhaps one of the things that I could do is then provide also a survey, the survey that MEP did do, a statewide survey for the committee members to have a reference. It seems to me that there are some good policy questions here about what the role of our current counselors are in regards to this new possibility, and perhaps we might also want to hear from counselors themselves as we hear these particular pieces of these policy recommendation and bills in the coming weeks. Representative Hoff and Commissioner, please just let me know when you need to go.
Because there's quite a
lineup here.
Right.
Well,
I'm sorry, I do have to go.
No, thank you for being here today. This was a last second request on our part, and you were very gracious to accommodate that for us. Thank you for being with us.
And I'll be glad to come back and be on the hot seat again.
Super, super. So, the new person in the hot seat is our Assistant Commissioner, Chaz Anderson. And we do have a question from Representative Hosh.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And real quick, just a point of clarification. Even though we're not a finance committee, I just want to know for sure that these numbers here are for the implementation of the policies, not the execution of them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, that is correct. I actually, we could just go start with the high school, and I can go through some of the mechanics of the proposals, Mr. Chair, if you think that's appropriate.
Why don't we do that really quickly? I do have quite a lineup here of questioners, and I really want this to be a good back and forth. But why don't we do that, and then we'll stop there, and then we'll pick up questioning from there.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you go to page 65 of the budget narrative, I believe that's the front page of the packet you have. This is the three-hour high school program the commissioner talked about. The governor is recommending $19.147 million in fiscal year 08 and $55.927 million in fiscal year 09. How that will work is the first year, fiscal year 08, which is the 2007-2008 school year, that will be a planning year for schools to put together a plan to meet the criteria of this proposal. They will receive $68 per student for grades 9 through 12 to put together that plan and go and move into transition for that plan. The reason for that first year of planning is that most schools have set their school calendar for the next school year by the time the legislature has adjourned in May. And so in order to put together a thoughtful plan, it was we want to advocate to have a transition year to do that. Then fiscal year 2009, which is the 2008-2009 school year, they high schools would begin full implementation of the plan. They would receive $200 per student for grades 9 through 12. So all of this money will flow out to the high schools that decide to participate. Every high school qualify for funding. We did not put a cap on this program other than the funding cap. So every high school that wanted to participate could participate in this program.
Okay, I'm going to, is that?
Yeah.
Is that, okay, kind of go with the flow here. We have a question from Representative Benson and then Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
Looking at this list of components, I have a question about one and then just kind of an observation I'd like to send your way. I taught for many years in one of the urban suburban schools. And we started offering advanced placement in the middle 1950s in my district. And I taught those courses for a number of years. But I'm wondering how much thought has gone into how these kinds of programs could be provided in some of the smaller student enrollment districts and greater Minnesota districts. How could they possibly be able to provide a year's college credit in schools that are, you know, having difficulty maintaining what I call this cafeteria-style program? Are you proposing that schools either consolidate in some way, or that we go to schools that offer maybe just math and science or language classes, schools, that kind of thing? Is this really practical to expect school districts in greater Minnesota, some of which are struggling with enrollment right now, being able to offer such a cafeteria-style program? That's the question, and I just have a little statement after, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, it wouldn't be that the school would be required to offer all those choices. Those are just some options they can provide to those students. So they may offer one or two of those options, but not all of those listed. In terms of greater Minnesota high schools, a lot of them are already undertaking programming like this. They normally do it through concurrent enrollment through our MinSCU system. So the high school will go into an articulation agreement with a two-year technical college or a two-year community college or a four-year institution that's in their regional area, which Minnesota does have quite extensive campuses across Minnesota. And what will happen is that MinSCU will train the high school teachers to deliver college-level general education credit in the high school. And then they will receive dual credit for both high school and for higher education through that articulated agreement, which the MinSCU institution they have decided to enter an agreement with. So that's generally how these types of programs have been administered in greater Minnesota high schools as of today.
Representative Benson, you had a follow-up.
Thank you. Just kind of a comment. The idea of rewarding school districts that do well, I suspect the district I worked in would get that credit. So, but I have a kind of a philosophical problem with the idea that schools that are struggling are going to be left with 2% increases in the funding. I understand the idea of rewards. For example, several years ago, I think it was for 1 or 2 years, those of us who were teaching advanced placement were given a economic incentive for the students who received 4s and 5s on the College Board test, and I enjoyed collecting that check, and so did a number of my colleagues. We felt a little guilty about it because many of our colleagues who were just as excellent teachers but did not have advanced placement classes to teach were not given those rewards. And so I suspect maybe that's one of the reasons, other than monetary, why the program ended in 1 or 2 years. I forget. I think it was 2 years. 1 year, was it? 1 year. It was very nice. So I am kind of an entrepreneurial type of guy anyway, so I enjoyed getting the check. But I do have a real problem with the idea of leaving some schools behind. That's really how I see it. I don't see why there ought to be any failing schools in the state. And I think instead of passing them over, we ought to be more vigorous in our support of those schools. So I have a basic philosophical disagreement with the governor and your approach. I just want to let you know, having been a teacher for many years in one of the silk stocking districts. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Benson, and I suspect we'll be debating this quite extensively in the weeks to come. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner Anderson. I'm going to echo a point that Representative Ward had brought up on Tuesday when we had a series that we had some superintendents here, and that is that it's fine and good to, you know, have the three R's and then plus, of course, the fourth R of relationships and lay this all out, but it seems that in many of our schools, not just the Minneapolis school where I have two daughters in high school are attending, but really throughout the state, you know, we have this class size issue, and particularly the fourth R of relationships. How can we, you know, reconcile this to a 21st century vision with the fact that in many high schools we have upwards of 40 kids in a class, we don't have adequate, you know, even space, desks, chairs, you know, not to mention tattered, out-of-date books. How can we, you know, focus on this while at the same time we have basic issues, you know, with staffing? And we were just talking with Representative Hosh and I at South High School where my kids go, two counselors. Commissioner Siegman spoke about the importance of counselors to this high school vision. Two counselors for 1,900 students. They had a shortage of counselors in Ricori when they had the tragedy there. Your thoughts about this? I think there's a disconnect, and it's not just an urban problem. I've talked to colleagues in small towns and in rural areas. How do you reconcile those realities with this vision?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, class size is a very important issue, and I know that past legislatures have tried to tackle this issue, provide for funding specifically geared to class sizes, and we've really struggled with bringing that number down, even when we have provided funding and ratios, and a lot of the school districts do not want the state to mandate a certain ratio. They'd like the local control, but then we hear that class sizes are too high, and this is an issue that we don't have an answer to solve, because it has been generally viewed as a local decision as to how large they want their class sizes, and you know, we've explored in the past having a state mandate of how large the class sizes should be at each level. I believe in 1999 there was a class size reduction bill that was passed with additional funding that focused more on the lower grades. I believe it was grades 1 through 3. We know it's important. We just, no one really sort of has the answer to solve it. That's one of the big problems we have. One of the things that we have focused on is trying to assist public education, improve public education. It's really looking at making sure we have effective teachers in the classroom. We know that research shows that the number one indicator of a success of a child is the parent, and public education, sometimes they can't do a lot about that, but the number two indicator for success is having a highly effective teacher in the classroom. And so over the past 4 years, we've been really focusing on initiatives that train teachers well, make them effective in the class size, are in the classroom, and sometimes that is difficult when class sizes are too high, but we know that if we have an effective teacher in the classroom, that we will improve student achievement.
Thank you.
We have a question from Representative Burdall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Deputy Commissioner Anderson. I really could go on a long time with this, but I'm going to try to shorten things up.
Thank you, Representative.
I thought you'd appreciate that. But for another time, another place, I'll go into a little more detail. But on your first, my first comment on answering your effective teachers, and I do want to commend the governor for, I think, in many areas, you know, attempting to move us in a proper direction. But, you know, I do have some concerns, and with effective teachers, I'm glad to see these programs that are, you know, working in that area. But when we look at math and science, just taking them particularly, we have a situation where the entry level salaries out of, you know, college are, the disparity is growing between the business world and education. How can we expect to maintain high-quality educators in math and science if they are earning, say, $60,000 in the business world and $30,000 in education? I have a great fear that while there are a lot of... teachers don't go into the job for money, generally, but there are, you know, they're willing to take a little less for some other perks so that they like children or whatever, but how long are they going to be willing to take a $30,000 pay differential in the first year? And therefore, we may be relegated to second and third level math and science teachers, which will lead to mediocrity in teaching and eventually lead to mediocre students coming out of the system. I mean, that's a concern that we are going to have to look carefully at and find a way to address. I'm concerned about, certainly we need foreign languages, more of it, but I'm concerned about the effect that is going to have on other classes in schools, on vocational, on agriculture, in Phi-Ed, and in a greater, more general concern as well. These are very good to have all of these things in high school, but so many of our patterns and habits are already set by the time these programs would be implemented in high school. We talk about early childhood, and that's important. We're talking about high school, but I hear very little about what goes on in middle school. And I think that many of these programs that we're talking about, which should be done in high school, should also be done in middle school. We should be starting foreign languages in fifth and sixth grade if we're really going to reach the goal that I think all of us have for our children.
Deputy Commissioner, middle school concerns and focus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ergal, we're really reviewing one proposal in isolation, but in totality of the governor's recommendation, he is looking at really a systems approach with his budget recommendations. The first thing is that we know on international tests that our fourth grade students are at the top. We get to middle school, they're about the middle of the pack, and then in high school, it drops from there. And so looking at the early years, we're doing well and we're at the top of performance, but if you peel down those numbers, we know that we're not serving a large portion of students that are not ready for kindergarten, and then they fall behind from there. So the governor has recommended funding for kindergarten readiness for at-risk students to get to target those funds at students that are not ready for kindergarten so they can start kindergarten, ready to be prepared and then to move on from there. In terms of the middle school and later years, as folks here probably know, in 2003 we repealed what was then the profile learning, and we put in more rigorous standards, particularly focused at the middle and higher years. And those standards was helping to raise the rigor in the middle school setting and in the high school setting. The 2006 legislature also added additional requirements for math and science. And a lot of those requirements are focused on the middle and high school years. And so the rigor will continue to increase in those years. So the idea is that we make sure all of our students are prepared through elementary school. We get to middle school, the rigor continues, and so that those students are challenged. And then we look at the high school experience as something a little bit different than what's been offered in the past, and providing more opportunities for post-secondary education credit, and also providing for some systematic changes in the high school so that teachers are better prepared, students are better prepared, and then, in effect, that basically makes them prepared for the workplace or for college or some post-secondary education beyond high school. We know from our study we did with Achieve that there's not a lot of difference between college readiness and workplace readiness. What you need to know for college is pretty much the same what you need to know for the workplace. So that's what we're really focused on in that high school setting, is making sure that student is prepared for whatever may lead after high school.
Real short follow-up.
Follow-up?
Real short.
Basically, then, what I'm saying is that, and I agree with you, if the achievement gap is beginning in fifth grade, then we need to attack that problem, strenuously where it's beginning, which is fifth grade.
Deputy Commissioner, we have a number of questions, but I also want to, and we'll get to them, but I also want to make sure that you have an opportunity to cover, some of the policy issues that perhaps haven't been covered yet, or perhaps that you think need a little bit more of laying out for us. So
okay.
I leave that to you if you want to take a few minutes to do that, and then we'll get back to some question and answer.
Sure, that would be great. One last point on the world language piece. We have a task force that's been looking at world languages and specifically also the Mandarin Chinese language and getting that into schools. One of the recommendations they will have in the report is that we should have at least 4 years of world languages in grades 7 through 12 or offering that earlier. And so our four-year requirement is flexible. It's not 4 years in high school, because we know that it's more effective to bring the world languages down to earlier grades than it is to wait till high school and then, you know, have a four-year requirement in high school. So I wanted to clarify that point, too, that that requirement is flexible. It's not just 4 years in high school. If you go to page 67, this is a governor's recommendation to expand the Advanced Placement International Baccalaureate Program. Just to give you some background on the funding of this program, actually Representative Benson mentioned we used to give performance awards for certain scores on tests. We did that for about 1 year in the mid-90s and then stopped doing that and decided to put more money into reimbursing students for exam fees, which was probably a more effective use of the funds. Not that we didn't want to reward teachers, but we were really rewarding a small cadre of teachers with that program. But the governor for this recommendation is recommending $7.3 million in fiscal year 08 and $8.11 million in fiscal year 09 to expand advanced placement, pre-advanced placement, and international baccalaureate programs in schools. In 2005, the legislature significantly increased funding for teacher training and for reimbursing exam fees. And we're really happy to say that because of that increase in funding, we've seen an 18.5% increase in participation for advanced placement and an 11% increase in participation for international baccalaureate programming. And the good thing about that is the College Board gives us annually the scores, the average scores of students and participation. And even with that increase in participation, that one-year increase, we've actually seen exam scores go up for both IB and AP. So that's really exciting news that as long as we've expanded the net of participation, we've also expanded or increased the scores of those students. And building on that, the governor is recommending this additional increases to put more programming into schools. A recent study by the College Board found that even students that scored less than a 3 on the AP exam, which is considered the minimal cutoff for college credit, and less than a 4 on the IB exam, which is the minimal cutoff for IB, even if those students scored less than those scores, they still performed better on the ACT, and they were more prepared for college than those students who had no access or to AP programming. So we know that rigor does make a difference for students to be prepared for college. This program that the governor is recommending would provide $85 per student to put in AP, IB, and pre-AP programming and use that funding. There's a number of allowances, but use that funding to hire staff, to expand AP courses and IB programming. It could be used for supplies that is necessary for these courses because these textbooks need to be replaced more often in these programs than in normal curriculum programs. So there's a number of allowable expenses allowed, and it's really the idea is to expand the AP and IB programming to more students and provide more opportunities for those programming. The pre-AP is relatively new program. It's focused at middle schools for getting those students prepared to take those AP courses in high school.
Deputy Commissioner, a year, maybe 2 years ago, Joe Nathan over at the U of M had published a report on the a number of characteristics of our AP, IB, also PSEO participation. And I remember the commissioner was at a meeting when he shared the results of that survey. And there were several things that he found, but one of the things he found was an unequal distribution, if you will, of opportunity in regards to AP and IB and also PSEO participation, some geographic isolation as well as some racial, ethnic, and income isolation issues, a big issue in greater Minnesota in terms of, you know, perhaps a low prevalence of access to these programs. Is it the intent of this initiative to address that issue in terms of evening out the access to and encouragement to participate in these programs?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And with the AP courses, with additional money, we did see an increase in low-income and minority students taking advanced placement courses. Interesting enough, I had We just discovered that actually the principal at Minneapolis North High School is going to require at least one AP course for students in the high school, that just to provide more access to those courses, and so we're always encouraging that. International Baccalaureate is a little bit different programming than AP because they go school-wide. They have a diploma program in high school, and then they have a middle years program and a primary years program. And the middle and primary years program looks to go school-wide. And so there's a lot more participation of low-income and minority students in the primary years program and middle years program because it is school-wide. In the International Baccalaureate program, students of color represent about 38%. So there's a lot more participation, at least in the middle and primary years for IB program. But that's just the structure of the program that would provide for that. So we have very much looked, one of our performance indicators for this programming and increasing funding is making sure we have more participation from minority students and also from low-income students. I'm really also happy to say with the additional funding from the 2005 legislature, we now reimburse 100% of exam fees for low-income students, and we come pretty close to 100% for all other students. So we found that, and we changed the legislation actually in 2003 to make sure that low-income students had their exam fees paid first, because we didn't want that to be a barrier to participation.
So a good example we're targeting is helping us to increase equitable participation. It'd be if you could, at some point, if the department could send me the data that reveals the characteristics of the increase in participation in these programs, I'd really appreciate it. We do have a few more questions, or quite a few questions. Representative Ward, Heidgerken, and Swales. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner Anderson. And I agree with and concur with and appreciate the comments from my colleagues prior to this. I'm going to be home this weekend, and I'm going to visit with all the school districts in my district. So I want to be clear on a couple things as I visit with my superintendent's administration and citizens within my community. And I'm going to just throw some comments at you and questions at you, and then...
Okay.
How about the students that are severely... When it says all students, I'm pretty fresh out of the classroom. When it says all students, will school districts get penalized if students that are severely physically handicapped, severely mentally handicapped, those students on IEPs, or just the student that says, you know what, I want to finish high school, but I don't want to go on to anything beyond that? And will school districts be penalized with the benefits if by those children? That's one question, and I know I've already been asked that, and I know I'm going to get asked it again. I heard you say that the implementation in 2008-2009 for all school districts that want to. Are there enough dollars allocated at every school district in the state of Minnesota choose to participate, because that wasn't true with the Q-comp, A-comp, whatever we want to call that. So are there dollars allocated that if every school district meets the standard and is going to try to do that? I really appreciate Representative Benson's comments on trying to close the achievement gap versus rewarding those districts that are doing well and looking at trying to bring up the districts that aren't doing as well. That makes a lot of sense to me. I think the districts that are showing major, and I think we've heard that in this committee, the districts around the schools around the nation that are closing the achievement gap are those districts that are spending time and resources for the districts that need them the most, rather than reward the ones that are doing well. As Representative Bessie said, the silk, what did you call it, Representative?
Silk stocking.
Thank you, silk stocking districts. And the last question is, that I have, is you talked about advancement in AP and those kind of things, and the numbers have increased from, I think you said, to 11% participation and things like that. The numbers have majorly increased in school districts with special ed services needing to be provided by school districts to the point of cross-subsidizing coming out of the general fund in most school districts, causing major financial problems. So it's great that we're raising participation in AP international baccalaureate and all those things, but are we taking into consideration the number, increases in those areas that are really significantly financially implementing and hurting school districts?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, let's have four questions there, so I'll try to address each one.
Deputy Commissioner.
The first question, I think, had to do with the high school proposal and penalizing special ed students. What happens now with special ed students, they have an individual education plan or IEP plan, and that is put together with the parents and the staff at the school. That will drive whether or not it's appropriate for this student to undertake dual credit. And that process, like any other process that happens in schools, is up to that IEP team to determine whether or not it's appropriate.
Representative Ward.
I did have one comment on that. When I look at the personal graduation plan, mm-hmm. is that an IEP for all students?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's not meant to be, it's meant to be a, not exactly an IEP, what an IEP is, because an IEP may be beyond academics and talk about physical therapy and what's necessary for the health of that child. What the personal graduation plan is meant to do is look at the academics and other extracurricular activities such as internships or work-based learning, or it could be sports too, that sets a plan for that student starting in eighth grade so that they remain focused on-time graduation. So it's not exactly alike, because the IEP is driven by federal law and there's specific things that must be met. But that team, that IEP team, must determine whether or not it's appropriate for that student to undertake dual credit, and for severely cognitive students, that's just not a possibility. But that's a determination for the IEP team and not the state. The second question is, I believe, was related to the high school proposal. Is there a cap? Can every school participate? The answer is yes. We have assumed, actually, in the budget that every high school will participate. So there is funding at $68 a student the first year and $200 a student the second year for grades 9 through 12. So if any high school wanted to go in the program, there would be funding available for the high school. The third question was about rewarding schools doing well, and Representative Benson had mentioned this. I think this is in relation to the Successful Schools Program, and that's coming. Actually, I think that's the next proposal that we'll talk about. That is providing a one-time incentive for schools that earn a 3-star rating in math or reading, and the 3-star is determines whether or not the school has made adequate yearly progress under the Federal Elementary and Secondary Education Act. That is determined. There's a lot of factors that go into whether or not you've made adequate yearly progress. It's not a straight look at the test scores and determination. There's a lot. It's an index system, and so schools earn full points for students that are proficient, and they actually earn some points for students that partially met the standard. And then that goes into a calculation, and so we determine things like safe harbor and how much growth they made. And so there's a lot of calculations that go into determining whether the school's made adequate yearly progress, and then they have a target to meet for that school year. And the law basically says by 2014 that every 100%, you should have 100% proficiency, and right now the Federal Education Act is up for reauthorization. We expect changes in 2008. As it relates to the STAR system, there will probably be some major changes to the STAR rating system, because we're trying to implement a growth model that will show growth for the student from year to year. Right now, we compare cohort to cohort, so we compare, for example, last year's fifth graders to this year's fifth graders, and we are in the process of developing a growth model so we can look at how students are growing instead of just a cohort to cohort comparison. One of the obstacles to that is not having consecutive year testing until this last spring. So, and it takes a couple of years to really have a fully integrated growth model to be able to accurately show that growth. So that's something that the department wants to integrate into its STAR rating system eventually, but right now we are not in a position to do that. The last question was special education funding. The governor's budget does recognize an increase in special education funding of inflationary of 2% the first year for fiscal year 08, and then another 2% in fiscal year 09. This is something that greatly concerns the department. And we have given it the same increase, percent increase as we granted the or proposed for the funding formula.
And Deputy Commissioner, can you say something on the linking of that that part of the formula to the general formula? Are there any recommendations?
Mr. Chair, the special education formula is not its own categorical program. We actually have a regular special education formula that we reimburse school districts, and then we have another excess cost aid formula that's for school districts that have high need students, high cost students that we reimburse. But that formula is separate from the general education formula.
Okay. We have lots of questions, but I'm kind of going back and forth here, making sure that we hear things that haven't been covered. So why don't you take a few more minutes to perhaps go over some other areas you think that you'd like to highlight for the committee, and then we'll get back to the question and answer.
Sure. Mr. Chair, going to page 69, I'll talk a little bit about the successful schools program. And I'll just briefly let you know how the funding works. It's 3 stars in reading or math. The governor, as you know, that there's about a $2.2 billion surplus. About a little over $1 billion of that surplus was permanent, ongoing, and the other half of it was a one-time surplus. So the governor is proposing using $150 million of that for a one-time payment to schools that could range between $90 per student to $120 per student, or 1.5% to 2.5%, depending how many schools meet that criteria of 3 stars in reading or math. The payouts would happen in September of each year. It would be based on the results of the test taken in April of the same year. So for this fiscal year 08, it would be for the results of the state test taken in April of this year, and then the payouts would happen September, October of this year, and then for fiscal year 09, it would just be 1 year later. Going to page 71, this is something the commissioner mentioned earlier. This is a recommendation to spend $2 million in fiscal year 08 and $4 million in fiscal year 09 for the math and science teacher academies. This is to provide rigorous professional development for our math and science teachers, and for all of our teachers, actually, to deliver the math and science standards. As we've raised the rigor, it's important that we make sure that that all teachers receive high-quality professional development. As I've mentioned before, one of the things we focus on is making sure that we have the resources targeted to make sure our teachers are as effective as they can be in the classroom, and this proposal will help deliver regional services to those teachers. Going to page 73, this is an increase in funding for a current grant program called the Collaborative Urban Educator. This program focuses to support educator training and recruitment for individuals and educational needs of urban school districts and diverse learning populations. As you can see, there's 3 programs currently in place at Concordia, University of St. Thomas, and Hamline University. The governor is recommending an increase in the appropriation for these programs of $773,000 in fiscal year 08 and the same amount in fiscal year 09. Going to page 75, this proposal is the Alternative School Calendar Pilot Project. The governor is recommending $2 million in fiscal year 2009 for a 6-year pilot project to further study the benefits or the drawbacks, could be, of an alternative school calendar. As you may know, there have been some education organizations pushing to add additional days to the calendar. The governor is recommending that we take a look and study this issue first. It's a very expensive proposal. It'll cost the state about $31 million for each additional day we put on the calendar, so the governor is actually recommending to review and study this issue before we move forward with funding additional days on the calendar. Page 76 is a recommendation on the Mandarin Chinese programming. The 2006 legislature provided funding for a task force to develop a K-12 articulated curriculum for Mandarin Chinese programs, and also come forth with recommendations to the legislature on a number of world languages issues. I'm happy to say that report is almost ready. It's over 100 pages. We've had people wanting to participate in the work group across the country and across the world. It's been quite extraordinary to get phone calls from China wanting to participate in our work group. But we've had some really dedicated folks that have been working on this, and what we're recommending is, which is something that's going to be in the report, is to provide startup grants to schools wanting to implement Mandarin Chinese programming. We have a number of schools that are interested in doing that. There are lots of obstacles that need to be overcome, which is putting together a curriculum, making sure that you have appropriate licensed teachers in the classroom. And so this money will provide them with some seed money to do the planning for that and explore programming in Mandarin Chinese. Page 78 is the Minnesota Reading Corps program. The governor is recommending $1 million per year to expand the partnership with YouthWorks or Serve Minnesota. This is the Minnesota's AmeriCorps program. And they've had lots of success at the St. Croix River Education District, or SCRED, implementing a reading and literacy model to improve outcomes. They would like to expand this programming. This state money will probably also leverage additional federal dollars because there is a match with the federal government if we put more state money in. We still do not know how much it will leverage, but as soon as we have that information, we will provide that to the committee. Page 79 is the Minnesota First Five New Teacher Induction Program. The governor is recommending just over $2.2 million each year to deliver a regional program that focuses not on all new teachers, but for new teachers in high-needs areas of the state that have multiple license shortages in many areas, or for high-need license areas. And we have determined that through the Board of Teaching to be math, science, world languages, and special education, where we have our license shortages. So this program will focus on mentoring those new teachers. Typically, they're matched up with a veteran teacher, and they go through a program with that new teacher. We have found that actually it really assists those new teachers to get beyond some of the first-year issues that all teachers have with classroom management and lesson planning, and they're able to learn and grasp those issues quicker. And then they can get, that helps them getting into being an effective instructor, the transition much easier. Also, this is a statistic that's nationally in Minnesota. It's pretty close to the national statistic, but we have found that 50% of our teachers leave the profession within the first 5 years of teaching. So this is also the program to help retain those teachers. As we move forward in the next 10 years, we're going to have a lot of turnover in teachers just because of the baby boomers retiring, and this program looks to retain those teachers in the classroom.
Deputy Commissioner, I'm going to stop you for a second doing this ping-pong thing. I'm going to turn to you, Representative Heigerken, and then Representative Swales.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Deputy Commissioner, I want to thank you, your knowledge. The Department of Education is very, very fortunate to have a young lady this knowledgeable. You do a very, very, very nice job presenting things in a very nice, coherent way. I really appreciate that. And again, things are more exciting. Some of you may not remember, and Representative Greiling and I do, among other members that have been in education, we've gone through some serious cuts in the past. We were held harmless. This is an exciting time for you new representatives to be here. We got almost $1 billion in new monies we're looking at. You would have had a different look on your face, right, Representative Slavik, a couple years ago? We were very frustrated when we not Representative Erickson. But we have a lot of new monies. And Representative Mariani, I think we have an understanding, and I think a lot of the committee members do not realize that. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of these bills come forth in different fashions, right?
That's correct.
So we'll have a further discussion of that. Representative Ward, I always appreciate your passion for education. It's good. We need to see more of that. With that said, Representative Benson, we've had discussions. Representative Swale, among others, Representative Tilbury. Some of the key pieces are missing here. And I think we'll get into that discussion, but at least I think we've got some good ideas here. I think the governor doesn't, you know, and I've always given him a hard time. He doesn't know how to present things in a proper fashion. I mean, if you want excitement, do what I did last weekend. Don't go home and talk to your administrators. Don't go and talk to the teachers. The ones that are doing this job, they're the professionals involved in this business. And too often we sit here, and we hear, and no offense meant, we sit here and we hear from administrators and school board members and everybody that wants to tell the teachers what to do when the teachers themselves know what to do. I mean, you wanted us to be like Finland, for God's sake. That's what Finland did. That's what the teachers take over the school system. That's why they're number one in the nation, in the world. But, I mean, we can go on and on and on, but we've got an exciting time here, but I think these bills are going to come forth. I talked to Representative Greiling, and I want to thank you, Representative Greiling, for asking me to come out to jacket it, to clone the governor's budget. So we're going to be bringing the bills forth in an individual fashion, and we'll have a good discussion on it. But I want to thank you. Look forward to it's going to be a lot of fun. With that said, thank you.
Thanks for your help with that, Representative Heigerich. And Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have so many questions. It's kind of like shooting a gun.
Just one or two, Representative Swales, please.
Yeah, I'll keep them brief, but, you know, I don't know where my buckshot's going to hit, hopefully, the target. I have several comments, and the first one is, call me cynical, but whenever there is some new government initiative, there is a surge in IEPs and 504 plans. Our wonderful counselors and special ed teachers meet once a week at the high school where I teach in order to assess those students who will qualify for IEPs and 504s. As soon as we hear that 4 years of foreign language is being required, or as soon as we hear that a year of college is required for all students, I think we will, call me cynical, but I think that that is going to be a real issue in our school buildings, and I don't envy the special ed teachers who have to deal with that issue. My second comment is this. 4 years of foreign language sounds wonderful, but we know as educators that readiness for learning a foreign language really happens in the very early years. In my school district, we have a Spanish immersion elementary school where all classes are taught in Spanish. It's incredibly successful. Parents camp out in the parking lot all night long to be first in line to get their kids into this program. And once again, I think we're missing the boat by not talking about teaching foreign language earlier. Fifth grade, great. Junior high, great. But let's be talking about it when kids truly are able to formulate and inculcate those abilities to learn a foreign language early on. My third comment is I am so pleased that the department is talking about creating a value-added, I think is what you're talking about, a value-added test to replace the current STAR system where you're comparing 1 year's students to the next year's students. What I have heard from teachers and from parents and students, they like having the immediate feedback for a test, and they like to know how they can remediate a problem. And I think the current STAR system is flawed. I come from a five-star high school, so I can speak, I think, with some sort of credibility there. Even though I come from a five-star high school, I think it is a flawed system. And the last thing I want to say is the big disappointment that I have in this budget is that we are giving $150 million, a one-time reward to schools that make three or more stars. However, we have totally ignored all-day kindergarten, which I think is one of the best things that we can do to ensure that students will be ready to learn in the later years. You can respond to any or all of those things or none. I don't care. I just needed to get that off my chest. All right.
Deputy Commissioner, any or all or none.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swales, as it relates to the world languages requirement, that actually the 4 years is very flexible, and to when that happens, we're not wedded to happening just in high school or just in junior high, and so we understand actually that pushing foreign languages or world languages down to the earlier grades is actually, research says it's more effective. As it relates to, I think we've talked about the STAR ratings, and I took down your comments and appreciate them. As it looks to, as we go to all-day kindergarten, one of the focuses that we have had in this budget, at least for preschool funding, is targeting to the at-risk population, just because the programming is very expensive, and we know that one of our problems in our earlier years is those at-risk students. And so What the governor's recommendation looked at is the at-risk students before they get to kindergarten. And we are very open to working with this committee and other committees on all the kindergarten proposals, and we welcome that, actually, that discussion.
Deputy Commissioner, can you jump to page 82 and just say something about the statewide assessment funding initiative here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the governor is recommending an increase in the statewide assessment funding for very specific purposes. One is, as you know, right now we administer a summative assessment, which is required under the Federal Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and we implement tests in grades 3 through 8 for reading and math, grades 10 for language arts, grade 11 for math. And then we are also field testing, and we'll have in operation a science assessment in grades 5, 8, and then at the end of biology for high school. In fact, that test will be an online interactive assessment when it is fully operational. The governor is recommending an increase in funding for the statewide testing program for four specific areas. One is to develop an online computer-based reporting tool for schools and students. Right now it's all paper-based. And so a lot of times it has to be either put together in a computerized format by the school, or we've had, you know, our teachers have to go and pull files for the existing students to take a look at their assessment scores. What this would do would provide an online secure web-based tool to give classroom teachers rights-based access to view assessment history of their students in their classroom, and then to use that assessment history throughout the year. And so it just provides them with reliable, easy-to-access data, and it will, I think, reduce the amount of time that's spent just in the process of data gathering for their students. The second area is that he's asking for an increased funding for is for computer-based graduation retests. Right now, we are transitioning from the basic skills test to what's called the grad test. In the effort, the 2005 legislature repealed the BST in an effort to reduce the number of testing days. And so what we do now, what we're moving into the process of doing is putting a subset of questions on the grade 10, actually it's grade 9 writing, which is a state requirement, not a federal requirement, and then on the grade 10 and 11 language arts and math test, which is our federal test we use to comply with the federal law, embedding a subset of graduation questions onto the test, and so they're really taking two tests in one administration. What we do is we look at the score for the MCAs and we determine proficiency, and we separate that out from those subset of questions that use as a state requirement for graduation. And if that student does not pass the state requirement for graduation, then he or she would have to retake that that portion of the test. They wouldn't retake the entire MCA. They would just retake the portion of the what's called the grad test. What we want to do in order to allow for enough opportunities for retakes is we want to go computerized based assessment for the retakes so that districts would have better control over the retakes, and they could do it every 6 weeks if they felt it was appropriate for that student. And so this, we need additional funding to develop that assessment and to move forward with that computerized retake of the graduation test. The third area is as we have changed the standards, we also need to change our tests to align to those new standards. That is not an inexpensive proposition because we do alignment studies with the old tests to the new standards, and then we discover that they're not exactly 100% the same, and we need to do item development in order to make sure that there's alignment with the new standards. And on item development, we undertake that process with Minnesota teachers and our vendor and the department, and develop test questions based on the standards. We field test those questions. Actually, we embed the field test questions onto the MCA assessment. And then we examine the items to see if there's do a, what's called a bias review to make sure those test questions are appropriate. We look at data and how many who answered it correctly to make sure that there's no bias in the questions. And then those once that those questions have passed that review, then they become available to be used on future tests for proficiency's sake. And so that process is very time-consuming. It's also very expensive because not every item survives the process, which is okay. We want to get rid of bad items. But that also takes a lot of time with Minnesota teachers, a lot of item development that happens, And we, as we revise the standards are in a six-year revision process, we need to have additional resources so that we make sure we have a process that has integrity. The last item, and this is really in response to the need for more real-time results, diagnostic results during the school year, is funding, which is on page 84, for a computer-based formative assessment. Right now, our test is a summative assessment. It's given at one point in time during the year. It's typically April. We have a testing window, and schools select when they will test within that window, what days that will be. What this would do would provide additional funding to develop what's called a formative assessment. It would be voluntary. It would not be mandatory of schools. Schools would use this formative assessment during the school year whenever they choose, just like they do with their local assessments. And that formative assessment would be aligned to our academic standards and our summative assessment, which would provide for better predictors of how Minnesota students would do on the summative assessment. So not only would it provide Minnesota teachers and schools with diagnostic information during the year, but it would also give them a better idea of how the students are going to do on the state summative assessment so they can make mid-course corrections if they felt that was necessary.
Thank you. We're going to push up against time here. I know that some members have expressed some concerns with the online tools, particularly in terms of just, you know, access issues. There are physical issues that a number of our schools face in terms of just, you know, providing access and perhaps even disruptive type of issues in terms of the flow of the normal school day and the goals for that school. So I suspect we'll be plowing that ground. And then there's also perhaps some interpretive issues in terms of interpreting the test and whether or not we're measuring content knowledge or perhaps we're measuring just the ability to use that particular technology. Those issues have come up. Let me just do this, because we're going to push you out of time. Let you know that, that we will not be meeting next Tuesday morning. That meeting time has been canceled. We will, however, reconvene for our meeting out in a community in North Minneapolis. There is a bus that will be departing here at 6:15 from the east side of the building. So that's the capital side of the building. You can begin boarding a bus at 6. Please make sure you're on time. The bus will leave to return to the state office building at 8:45. So we hope to be back here by 8:45. So please let us know if you, particularly if you cannot. Well, actually, let us know either way. If you are able to participate in that meeting so that we can take care of some of the logistics. Actually, Representative Greiling, CLA, Elizabeth Mandelman, is handling the logistics of that. So if you can be in touch with Representative Greiling, CLA, in this regard, I greatly appreciate it. Let me think. I think that's it. One more thing. We have a minute or two. Representative Brown, I'm going to have you ask the last question. I do apologize for the other members, but we did pretty good this time in terms of getting it. And Deputy Commissioner, you've done a wonderful job in fielding a ton of different questions from different angles. I appreciate your ability to do that and your willingness to do that. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know so much if I've got questions as I've got comments. I have a strong level of interest in the alternative school calendar, and I'm wondering a couple of things and hoping that you'll consider this as you're setting up the pilot programs. I know that I've heard some information that there have been some elementary schools who have tried this, and I see this as being a strong benefit for the high schools as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that when these are set up and when it becomes available for different schools to apply to be a pilot school, that you'll take into consideration things that could really take away from the benefit of the information that would happen from this. And school districts have, as you know, high schools have competitive conferences, which might prevent them from being able to participate in such a pilot program. And I think it's so important to include them in the information that as you structure this, I would hope that if it's possible to include many schools that are in the same conference so they can really see this through and get some accurate information on the success of the students in the situation. So that's one thing. And I'm asking also, are there schools that are being considered at this time? I'm wondering how far ahead this has been thought and the type of demographics that you might be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, this idea really has come from those schools that have had some success with the 45-15 model in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester. Actually, I think some of you came down to Rochester to visit the 45-15 site this fall. Trying to look at a different way to restructure the calendar. And what those schools will say is they do less remediation with their students because of that summer learning gap. They actually do not teach any more instructional days, but because they have less of a gap in the summer, they're able to sort of bridge that makeup that always seemed to happen in September when the students would come back from summer break. One of the challenges, and I think you've said it very well, is the high school. It's very easy to put elementary schools and possibly middle schools on an alternative school calendar, but the high school is a different prospect because of all the programming that happens after school and the extracurricular activities. So I very much welcome your suggestion on having a pool of high schools in the same conference so that the no one high school is missing out on some extracurricular activity. We haven't selected or gone through any of that process. We always wait for you to decide, is this a good idea or is this not a good idea? And then once the legislature makes that decision, if they should fund it, we do typically consult with chairs and authors of bills to make sure that we're implementing it in the intent that it was perceived to be implemented. So that's something that we take very seriously. So as we move forward, we'd be happy to work with you and other legislators if you should have interest in this idea. I know others have expressed interest in the program as well. So we always look forward to working with legislators.
I think it's an exciting proposal for us to explore together. Deputy Commissioner Anderson, again, thank you for being here with us today. To the members who did not get to ask questions, I apologize. We'll try to make sure you get to ask the first questions next time around. We are adjourned until next week.